The content shared on Your Life, Your Wealth Network reflects the views of the host and guests of the program only and are not necessarily the views of Cordasco Financial Network or its advisors. This media production is educational in nature and should not be construed as financial, legal, or tax advice or a solicitation or presentation of sale of any financial products or services. Please consult a professional prior to making any financial, tax, or legal decisions. Welcome to the Your Life, Your Wealth Network. Helping you find clarity and comfort for your life and wealth. Now, here's your host, financial advisor, and CEO of Cordasco Financial Network, Steve Cordasco.
And hello, everyone. That's me, Steve Cordasco. Thank you so much for joining us on Your Life, Your Wealth. Glad to host you today, and we have a lot to cover in this hour program. Jim Rickards, one of my good friends, best-selling author, Currency Wars and the Death of Money. He's also a global strategist for the West Shore Funds, will be joining us. We'll talk economy, Federal Reserve, global markets, and a new piece he has written, Back to the Future for the Fed, that is posted on our website at cfnplan.com. You can catch it there. Joe Cortese will be joining us. He's with DeMayo Schneider. We'll talk stock market at the U.S. stock market here in the short term, where he sees stocks and bonds on the short end. I'm going to cover a local topic here to us in the Philadelphia market. We're seeing a number of companies in the Philadelphia region leaving to take their business overseas. They find cheap labor available in places like Mexico and Europe, Poland, Ireland. Companies like QVC, who has just announced that they're moving some middle management to Europe, as well as Cardone Industries, which is moving their manufacturing of auto part jobs to Mexico. We'll be talking about that and what it means to you. Would you move yourself if you were treated better elsewhere, maybe outside the U.S. or maybe outside the state you're in? We'll talk about whether or not those of you would actually venture to a place that treats you better. Some do it by venturing to Florida. We'll talk to a gentleman that I've become friendly with, Raul Vidal, on why Puerto Rico could be a destination choice for some businesses as well as some individuals. But first, let's kick off with Jim Rickards. Jim, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Steve. Great to be with you.
Yeah, glad to have you. We've done many of interviews back and forth, and they're always lots of fun to do. And you have so much information that that really helps the average everyday person. A lot of your work is sophisticated, but you're able to bring it down so that just about everyone who may not have taken courses in economics or finance can understand. The piece that you recently penned for our clients at West Shore, as well as Cordasco Financial Network, Back to the Future for the Fed, is getting a lot of attention. You touch on some interesting points of how we're now maybe in a new phase or venturing into a new space. So let me get into that. There's a question that's brewing today, and you brought this up in the piece, of whether we're entering a new period for fiscal dominance in which the Federal Reserve will have to give up control of its balance sheet and its interest rate policy in order to save the U.S. from something called secular stagnation. If you would explain again to the average individual the implications for this and why you're saying it could be monumentous.
Well, absolutely, Steve. And that was a great question and covered a lot of ground. So let me unpack the parts of that question. We'll take them one at a time. The title of the piece I wrote that is on the West Shore blog, Back to the Future for the Fed, that implies something you have to go back to and something in the future, obviously the same thing. The thing I was going back to, March 4th, 2016, so just not long from where we're talking, is Independence Day for the Fed. You know, we all know 4th of July is Independence Day for America. March 4th is Independence Day for the Fed. And this refers to the time, March 4th, 1951, when the Fed regained its independence. Prior to that, from 1942 to 1951, the Fed was in a deal with the Treasury and by extension the White House to cap long-term interest rates, put a cap on them. And the reason they did that was because we were fighting World War II. And when you're in a world war, it's existential and you need to finance it and everyone needs to do their part. And the Fed agreed to cap interest rates to make it inexpensive for the federal government to finance the debt they needed to fight the war. And indeed, at the end of World War II, we had a 100% debt to GDP ratio. Now, we worked it off. That came all the way down to 35% by the early 70s, but that took, you know, 20 years almost to work that down. And by the way, we are now today, we are back to 100%. So as we speak in 2016, the debt to GDP ratio is back up to 100% for the first time since World War II. But the problem was, when World War II was over, there was still some economic adjustment. President Truman was quite the populist, kind of makes Bernie Sanders look like a conservative. He loved low interest rates. He didn't see why people should, he didn't see the problem with inflation. So he kept pressuring the Fed to keep this deal on. And then we got into the Korean War, and the rationale seemed to extend itself. Anyway, by March of 1951, there was a showdown. And actually, the president called the entire board of governors to the White House. Can you imagine that happening today? President Obama picks up the phone and says to Janet Yellen and Stan Fisher and Bill Dudley, you know, and everyone, hey, get over here to the White House. I want to talk to you guys.
Yeah, can you imagine with all the TV media today? I mean, it's you know, they actually remember Greenspan crossing the street, what hand the briefcase was in, watching that on CNBC. Anyway, but go ahead, not to deviate.
You know, no, you're right. Can you imagine the entourage of black cars heading over to the White House and say, well, anyway, I can't imagine that happening today, but that did happen, and Truman dressed it down. But there was a showdown. The Fed basically said, look, we are an independent agency. We're going to do this anyway. If you have a problem with it, take it up with the Congress. We have a congressional mandate. And the Treasury made a compromise. And that was the Treasury-Fed Accord, which is basically a peace treaty. And it was on that day, March 4, 1951, that the Fed regained control of its balance sheet and interest rate policy. And they've been very independent ever since, and even more independent. The point I make in the article is we may be getting close to the point. And I see this coming. Not this year, because we've got a couple other things going on, but maybe as early as 2017, where the Fed will once again agree to cap long-term interest rates, put a cap on them, probably at a lower significantly, at a level rather significantly lower than they are now, to basically help the federal government fight another war. It's not a world war. It's the war on global stagnation. Now we're into the second subject you raised, which is what is secular stagnation? You hear it from Larry Summers. You hear it from Christine Lagarde, you hear it from other, you know, global policy elites. The idea basically is that developed economies had been growing around 3-3.5% for a long period of time. Emerging markets, they should grow faster, but the mature economies, U.S., Europe, Japan, some others, should be growing 3-3.5%. They're not. The U.S. is the best of the bunch. It's barely growing 2% for the last 8 years, and the other economies I mentioned have barely had positive growth at all. I mean, Europe's just, as I say, closer to zero. U.S. has been about 2. Japan's close to 0. The developed world has stopped growing. We're stagnant, and this is what they mean by secular stagnation. So the question is, what's it going to take to get the world economy back to trend growth, back to that 3-3.5% level? Because if we can't do that, then you cannot pay the debt. You cannot. It's not even a question of paying off the debt. You don't have to pay off the debt, but you do have to roll it over and refinance it at reasonable rates. And you can't do that if you can't sort of get growth higher than the deficits are going up. And right now we don't have this. So we need higher growth. So the question is, how do you do it? Well, for the last 8 years, central banks have tried monetary policy. They tried forward guidance, QE1, QE2, QE3, Operation Twist, currency wars. I mean, you name it. They've tried everything. It has not worked. It might have prevented a worse depression in 08. I'll give credit for that. But it has not been successful in getting us back to trend growth. So now the thinking is that the only way to do that is with a fiscal policy, meaning basically bigger deficits. And this is where helicopter money comes in. So the way it works is Congress votes the big spending bill. And you can be sure that if the Democrats win, it's going to be, you know, education, transportation infrastructure, you know, health care and so forth. If the Republicans win, probably more defense spending. We don't need to get into those policy debates. It's enough to say that both parties are primed for bigger deficits. So the idea is you run a bigger deficit, you spend the money. And notice that people don't want to spend money, businesses don't want to spend money, the government will. That's the idea. This is Keynesianism. This is Keynesianism 101 right out of the 1930s. So nobody else wants to spend? Fine. The government will spend the money. That means bigger deficits. That means more borrowing by the Treasury. And then the Fed buys the debt. The Fed monetizes the debt to keep interest rates from going up. So this is what we mean by helicopter money. It's different from QE. QE is when the Fed prints the money, gives it to the banks, and then the banks give it back to the Fed as excess reserves. Helicopter money is when the Congress spends the money, Treasury borrows to cover the debt, and then the Fed buys the debt and prints the money that way. So this is the plan to get the economy moving again. Now, here's the problem. If you run this kind of deficit, people are going to start to lose confidence in government finance, and they're going to start to demand higher interest rates. And with the more spending, you might see more inflation. And so let's say the 10-year note on those, on that set of facts got up to 3 or 4%. Well, it completely defeats the purpose because you're trying to stimulate the economy and restore confidence. At the same time, interest rates are shooting up, and that's increasing the deficit even more beyond the spending. So that just makes the situation worse. So you need to do two things. You need the helicopter money, but you also need to put a cap on rates. That's called financial repression. All these things have technical names, but it, common sense is they're just going to put a cap on interest rates. And the Fed would just have to buy as many 10-year notes or 5-year notes as needed to keep a lid on rates, the same way they do at the short end of the curve, which means that you would give up control of your balance sheet. The balance sheet might go from $4 trillion to $6 trillion. I don't know how many 10-year notes the Fed would have to buy to keep a lid on rates, but as our friend Mario Draghi said, whatever it takes. So now you're in a situation. The only difference between this time and maybe World War II is that the Fed would be on board. The Fed would actually be saying, yeah, we'll do our part. But, you know, maybe that is what they did in World War II. But the point being, the Fed would have to buy all the 5- and 10-year notes, all the intermediate term debt it would take to keep a lid on rates while the government was spending more, while deficits were getting larger. This would be a revival of that old 1940s World War II Treasury Fed Accord. Significance for investors, you'd probably want to buy, 5- and 10-year notes today at these levels. They're yielding 171, but if you think that, 1.7%, 1.71%, but if you think that, the Fed's current tightening policy is going to slow down the economy, which I do, and furthermore, you think that the only way out of secular stagnation is something like I just described, meaning helicopter money and putting a lid on rates, then you could see the 10-year notes down around, 1%. That's, you buy them at yield to maturity 170 and they go down to 1, you just have a big capital gain. So it has big implications for investors.
Now, we talk about jobs later in the program moving overseas, and it seems as if really it's kicked off in the 90s with the whole Clinton era of deregulating the financial industry, as well as allowing competition overseas. So jobs have been seemingly leaving, right, the U.S. Therefore, we're losing our good job base, right, which means we lose people who can support an economy. Greenspan goes into low interest rates. Everybody refinance, use your house as an ATM, right? Which helped the economy. So here we are faced with this cycle. Will that solve the problem? Because you do post in the blog that you put up on our site, this new global consensus emerging. And you mentioned folks like Larry Summers, who maybe some people don't know, but I think a lot of folks know Joe Biden, who seems to be in that camp that the only solution is to stagnation is to expand government spending on infrastructure, healthcare, technology, and all that, the social side of things. You're in the camp. You think Joe Biden's going to throw his hat in the ring here and has, I think last time I talked to you, said he'd be our next president, but maybe I misheard. So with that, how's this thing pan out? Now, is this going to be a long-term type of phenomenon? Because I don't see jobs coming back. And is it the solution to jobs that are leaving?
Well, again, a couple of different threads there, Steve. Joe Biden is still my bet to be the next president. By the way, when I say things like that, I hope the listeners understand that that's an analysis. That's my analysis, my estimate. It doesn't mean I'm picking sides or voting for anyone in particular or endorsing any candidate. I'm just trying to be as objective as I can. But I do think Hillary Clinton will face criminal charges of some kind, whether that's people throw the word indictment around. I don't know that it would necessarily come to an indictment. It could be just, the FBI and the Justice Department prosecutors sit with her lawyers in a closed room at some point and say, your client is looking at these charges. Maybe you want to plea bargain, because David Petraeus, former director of the CIA, he plea bargained on misuse of classified information. There was no trial or indictment there. So it might be way up, but the point is it would be the end of her presidential campaign. I think the mere fact that the FBI in due course may just interview her as a target of a criminal investigation, even short of an indictment or some kind of announcement of charges, might be enough to derail her. So Let's see how that plays out. I mean, that's my best read on the situation right now. If that happens, the Democrats are going to be as, you know, freaked out about Bernie Sanders as the Republican establishment is about Donald Trump. And both parties have their candidates that the establishment is not backing. The Republican establishment is not supporting Trump, and the Democratic establishment is not supporting Sanders. So if Hillary runs off the rails and Sanders is beyond the fringe, then they're going to have to turn to Biden. Now, interestingly, Joe Biden right now is on what he calls the stimulus tour. And if I didn't know better, and maybe I do know better, it sort of looks like a campaign tour. But Biden has gone out to encourage the idea of what we just talked about in the last question, which was more fiscal stimulus, more government spending, specifically on infrastructure. So for a Democrat, that means, you know, green technology, transportation infrastructure, schools, bridges, you know, it's all good stuff. I mean, nobody wants your bridges to fall down. But he's going city to city, pointing out projects. But what he's really doing, he's keeping himself out there. Notice Biden went to Scalia's funeral, not the president. Biden's got a pretty high profile, political profile right now for lame duck VP, which I think tells you something about what's in the air. That said, these things don't happen by accident. I look at Dara Turner, who's head of a think tank run by George Soros. I look at Christine Lagarde, of course, head of the IMF. I look at Larry Summers, professor at Harvard, former Treasury Secretary, Joe Biden, perhaps our next president. They're all saying the same thing. Now, I'm not saying there's some deep, dark conspiracy, but I am saying that these things are never coincidental. The world is being prepared for a lot more government spending, and that means debt monetization by the central banks, because the elites look at it and they say this is the only way out.
Fascinating. Fascinating stuff, Jim. Thanks always. It's a pleasure to speak with you. It's a fantastic piece that you penned for the West Shore Funds. It is up on our site, your blog, Back to the Future for the Fed. Much more there than we had time to cover here in this interview. But I recommend folks give it a read. You can go to cfnplan.com and check it out. And again, Jim Rickards, author of Currency Wars, The Death of Money, two New York Times bestsellers, and the global strategist at the West Shore Funds. Jim, thanks again. Really, really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Your Life, Your Wealth Network. All of our shows are reproduced as podcasts and can be listened to on demand at your convenience. If you're interested in learning more about applying the principles we discuss to your personal financial circumstances, please visit Cordasco Financial Network at cfnplan.com or call our office at 215-558-3500. We hope you'll join us again next time on the Your Life, Your Wealth Network.